Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable
absolutely
talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next on Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm Jay Moran, and today we're going to get into a topic that we haven't had a chance to really get into here at What's Next, the intersection of science and race. With us, Regina Barber, PhD of physics and also host of Shortwave.
Yes.
On NPR.
Yeah.
Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, radio doesn't allow to call me Dr. Barber because I'm not a medical doctor. It makes me really sad.
It's okay. Would it be okay if I called you Dr. Barber?
Yeah, nobody does.
Oh,
nobody does.
Oh, I love formal names. It's my fallback. Very good. But it fascinated in the sense that on a lot of levels, just the topic for sure. But yesterday when we just were kind of kicking it around, we said—
I was just hanging around here.
Right. Well, we grabbed you and found some time. And we asked you just a basic, you know, question about the intersection of science and race.
And pop culture.
And pop culture.
Yeah.
And you went into a very interesting aspect. You said—
Well, I said one phrase.
Star Trek.
I said Star Trek.
Star Trek. So now I will hand it off to you. You tell us about how Star Trek meets that.
No, I mean, Star Trek is like the place, I think, for a lot of people like me who are a scientist of color, who has gotten to science because we also like TV. You know, like I spent so much time in front of my my TV. This is before, I mean, I was also playing video games, but I spent, I don't know, 5 to 6 hours a day as a kid watching TV and playing video games. And like a lot of it was Star Trek or Simpsons or Batman, the animated series. And it was just really important for me to see people doing science in space in the future that weren't white. Like I think Gene Roddenberry was huge. He's the creator of Star Trek. And in the 60s, he was like, I want, you know, my version of the future to represent our country, you know, and our, you know, what we look like. And he did. And he didn't actually even know that all of, you know, science fiction before that, everybody in the future was white. Like, and imagine yourself, you know, looking at a show, looking at stuff you love. I mean, I loved sci-fi and never seen somebody look like you. I guess you're dead. Like everybody, all your descendants, everybody who looks like you, they just don't exist in the future.
I appreciate you bringing that up. And you're obviously a reflective person.
Yeah.
So take me down that to a little bit. That sense, like you said, not seeing, oh, please, open.
Yes. I'm going to open my drink now.
Yes, have a drink. And because you got a lot of work ahead to carry the show the rest of the way through.
Yeah.
But
my beautiful voice.
But the idea that, you know, we've talked about this a lot of that. People, you know, seeing, I never saw anybody who looked like me in these positions.
Yeah.
That is a recurring theme in this program for almost 4 years.
Yeah.
But so take me through your experience then.
Yeah. So I grew up in a very small town in Northwest Washington State. It was 7,000 people. I looked at the statistics. I looked at the like demographics of 1990, which was around the same time I moved there. And it was like 95% white or something like that. There was a cross burning there. There's active KKK. You know, we used to have like demographics on newsletters sent out in our public school. And it would be like, you know, 4 Asian kids, 2 black kids, like literally would have a list. Wow. It wasn't great. There was we'd always hear the joke that that town had the largest numbers of church, the largest number of churches per capita in like Washington State. It was a very religious town. And there was one Catholic church. I remember there was a billboard and it said the Pope is the Antichrist.
Oh, my.
So it was like, it wasn't even if you were not white. It was like if you weren't even Protestant, you couldn't be there. Do you know what I mean? Like it was messed up. So I remember I would spend every summer in Southern California because my parents were divorced. So I would go from that environment to being in Southern California where my mom is from Taiwan. She was born there and came over in her 20s. And my dad's family has been in East LA for many generations, 4 generations at least. And they're Mexican American. So I myself is just, I'm just this like very ambiguously ethnic kid in this really, really white town. And I was actually very tan when I was younger. I looked more Mexican when I was a kid. And I was called the N-word. Like, people would literally drive by and, like, throw the N-word at me because they didn't know any other slur. They didn't know, like, the right slur to get. They only knew one.
Oh, my.
So, like, and I had things thrown at me, you know, like. And so I think people don't understand, you know, that like, even in, you know, a place like Washington State, even Western Washington State, people are like, oh, it's just the eastern part. I'm like, no. It's like any rural area can have this for people, somebody like me. And so like in that town, like I wasn't even female. Like women are white. So I wasn't even a woman, right? I wasn't even a girl, right? So like I think people may not realize this because Star Trek seems so nerdy, but it has this phrase and it can't, and like in Star Trek, there's something called infinite diversity in infinite combinations. And me being mixed, you know, Chinese, Taiwanese, and now as an adult, like, you know, a woman, I'm a woman, I'm a first generation college student, I'm like first PhD in my family, I'm a scientist, I'm a podcaster, I'm all these things, but I'm not just one of those things. And in that town, you had to like, they were so confused. They're like, you're Chinese. And I was like, yeah. And I'm like, but you said you were Mexican. I'm like, yeah. Two people had a baby. Like they didn't understand, right? Like you can't, they, so I love Star Trek because you could be everything. Like, you know, and there was Voyager, which was a Star Trek series that came after Next Generation. And it was one of the first like main character, like Hispanic, like Latinas. And she was half Klingon and half human, but like that human part was Latina. And I was like, oh, I guess that's the closest I get. But you know, yeah, it was just a very great show to have some, like people that were mixed, people that love science. They were all nerds. They, you know, lived in this future where there was no money. Like no one was poor in the Federation. Like, oh, man, it was great. I loved it.
Yeah. And I think back to that show. I'm old enough actually to remember when it was on its first run.
Yeah.
Friday nights, NBC.
Wow.
In the summer of whatever year that was. But yeah. So I do have those I do have that memory. But for me, it was entertainment. I never thought of it in terms of race or anything along those lines. Just kind of these people with these cool instruments going to cool places.
That's how you get people. That's what science communication is, right? Like, that's how you give them entertainment and you show them, you know, at least that's the way
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Please continue. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, I think I did inclusion work. I was the first equity the first inclusion and outreach specialist at Western Washington University. I did this for 8 years. I was there for almost 10. And it was so hard to really convince people. At the beginning, it was really hard to convince people there was racism. And then, you know, like George Floyd happened and the, you know, pandemic and people started coming around a little bit. But I think that like hearing about racism, hearing about sexism and like really being hit over the head with it is is like our instinct. It's kind of like scientists. We're like, can I just tell you about the science? Can I just tell you about, you know, the climate crisis and then you'll just believe me? Like, that's not how you do it. You actually have to give them some sort of something to hold on to, some connection.
Okay.
And after I stopped doing equity work, I realized that I can do a lot of that equity work in science communication. Like, you can show people scientists that look like me, that look like their neighbor. You can tell them about, like, certain science that, you know, happened in the past that was done by people of color that you don't even know, or and like, you can talk about eugenics and how bad that is, you know, and I think you're just giving them fun facts, and people love fun facts, and they don't realize that they're also being like educated about race and gender and equity and all that kind of stuff.
You mentioned George Floyd, so
yeah.
Now we're already now a few years gone by,
yeah,
since then.
Yeah.
Curious about your impressions of whether or not people are accepting embracing discussions about race in the same way they were perhaps right after the George Floyd incident.
This is my personal opinion. This is not of NPR.
I know, or science,
at all.
But this is me. But you're immersed in this, and I'm sure you're getting comments from all sorts of places.
Yeah, as somebody who did equity work, in my opinion, I think the current discord that we have is pushing all that discussion away. It feels like when I started doing this work, where like people just didn't want to. It feels worse because when I started doing that kind of work, people were like, "Don't talk about race, talk about class." You know, don't talk about race, talk about gender. They would just like, "Don't talk about race." And then we did for a while, and I think it was important. I think after. President Obama was elected. I think a lot of people who never felt comfortable talking about race were suddenly like relieved. They're like, oh, post-racial America. Like, I don't have to think about this anymore. And I think a lot of those people are waking up right now. If they still are, you know, I think say that they themselves are liberal. I think they're waking up now that all this kind of America that they thought was gone is still here. And I think that America is making it very hard to talk about that stuff now, and I feel huge regression. It reminds me of like in the 90s when there was like Family Matters on TV. Again, TV is my first friend. I know TV so well. And you know, like In Living Color and like all of these shows that were really like, they had prominent like black families, and I mean, In Living Color was a black family. It was everybody was related,
right, yes,
you know, and all the Wayans and stuff who are awesome, you know, they're the ones who discovered Jim Carrey. But like I remember as a kid, I was like, wait, who is this guy? Everyone loves Jim Carrey. It's like, this is the guy from In Living Color. But like the media landscape was different. There wasn't so much of like, I think, siloing. And then I think it got worse. And people were like, no, racial equity just gets better and better, like a linear graph. And no, it does not. It goes down and then comes back up and then goes down again. And I think we're in one of the down ones.
And I appreciate that. I would concur my opinion as
yes,
well.
Yes.
But and also sitting here and having these discussions, the thing I'm always wonder about and try to grasp is how to combat that. How to get that conversation back on that upward trend again.
You have to make good media. You just have to make good media. I think when people try to tackle these things and they don't do the research and they aren't creative, then it sucks. I shouldn't say that. I don't know. Like, then it's bad. Then it's,
I'm going to mark that 22 minutes in.
Yeah. I mean, look at Sinners. It's one of my favorite movies of last year. And I think it was masterfully done. Like, it talked about this idea of like, you know, an Irish person, you know, not even understanding what racism is in the United States, you know, versus what he's had to deal with under like British rule, you know, and like just this discussion that race is different. It's a social construct that is different in different societies. Right. It's even different in different parts of the U.S. Right. So like I think it's if you make good media and it's good on its own, like K-pop Demon Hunters. Literally, those are my two favorite movies last year. K-pop Demon Hunters and Sinners. Like they are, you know, really showcasing people of color and people who are not usually the, you know, the stars. And they were great stories.
The Making good media. I love that. And I'm going to be resting on that for some time beyond this. But at the same time, does it need to be intentional or?
Yes.
It has to be intentional.
It has to be. Yeah, because I think if it's not intentional, it's so easy to do it poorly. And you're like, this, what a great byproduct that this also talks about race. No. I think that, like, I was researching Star Trek and trying to get some facts for you. And I stumbled upon so many people being like, oh, Star Trek is racist and it didn't do it perfectly this. And I'm like, you know what? You're right. Like, there are problematic things from, like, the original series. There's some problematic things from The Next Generation. There's some problematic things on shows now that the Star Trek series are doing. Is it 100% perfect? No. But is it trying its hardest to tackle all these things? Yes. You know? And I think when you do equity work for so long, you start to become jaded and you're like, well, you know, they're not knowing this term. They're not, you know, aware of this thing that happened. How can they not know that? You know, for instance, I really liked the movie Zootopia. I loved it. And then people started pointing out, like, kind of the propaganda it was and kind of this, like, equating of race and violence. And I was like, ooh, that is rough. Like, I can totally see your point on that. However, I think there are some things that they did really well, right? And so, like, I once I got away from equity work, I started to have a little bit more grace for things that are trying to do things better and weighing the good and the bad, you know, so. And allyship and solidarity.
Stay with us. There's more What's Next after this on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Public media starts here, in our neighborhoods, our schools, our city halls, where decisions meet real life. BTPM NPR's local reporters are asking the questions that matter, listening to the people affected, and explaining what it all means for our region.
There's a lot of poor record keeping. There are records that list that don't reconcile with other lists. There's a lot of gasoline that's being used that isn't properly accounted for. And there are a lot of people with take-home vehicles.
That's Erie County Comptroller Kevin Hardwick. He's outlining just a few of the issues his office found when conducting an audit of the county's vehicle fleet.
From paper trails to public impact, this is journalism that stays with the story and with the community it serves. Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR, produces journalism with depth, care, and purpose. This is Public Media.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
A downed tree, a broken bike or two, and hundreds of miles between Buffalo and Brooklyn. That's the journey in Rolling Through, a new video series from Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Producer Pat Kelly is biking the Empire State Trail, exploring nature, culture, and how eco-friendly travel can connect us to the places we visit.
Oh, we are getting rain soon.
Cool, it's coming.
New episodes of Rolling Through arrive every week. Watch on the BTPM YouTube channel and BTPM Plus.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back. You're listening to What's Next from Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm Jay Moran. With us this morning is Dr. Regina Barber.
Yep.
The host of Shortwave and the NPR podcast. You also hear her. I guess I'm Do you only on All Things Considered?
I do go on All Things Considered.
Do you ever pop up on Morning Edition? I don't think so.
Sometimes. I'm writing a spot right now.
Are you really? Yeah. When am I going to hear it? I'll have to be keep my eye.
It's going to be a short. It's just a short thing. Oh, okay. Yes, sometimes I show up.
All right. Very good. Well, I'll certainly be looking for or listening for you a little more carefully than I have in the past. I apologize for that.
No, it's okay.
But back to your entry into science.
Yes.
And you can always kind of reflect on Star Trek in any way that you want.
Yes.
But just
Star Trek is life.
Take us through what that was like. I hate to admit to my own personal, like when I was in high school, I just couldn't stay with physics. I couldn't stay with chemistry. And
I didn't do well in physics to start.
Wow.
I didn't. I wanted to go into astronomy.
Okay.
And I really loved space. I loved the stars. You know, I wanted to be an astronaut until I was like, ooh, it's very dangerous. No, I don't want to do that. And I loved going to planetariums. And my dad really, really encouraged me. He passed away recently.
Sorry.
And yeah, and he's the one that got me into Star Trek. And he would literally sit us down and he'd be like, this is what this Star Trek episode is about. You know, and my Mexican-American family in L.A., some of them are pretty light skinned, so like they get kind of confused for being like Italian or whatever. And so he would always say when I was younger, he'd be like, we're light, not white. and he would literally say that. He's like, we're light, not white. And I think it was really important for him, for me to see these people like doing science and doing like being in space, the thing that he knew I really loved. Right. He already loved the show. You know, and I think that I was really into astronomy. The college I wanted to go to didn't have an astronomy program. It only had a physics program. So I kind of just ended up there.
Wow.
I helped renovate their really, really old planetarium. So when I was 18, I got to run it. Like my first year there. And I was there for only 3 years because I did like some college in high school. I got my transfer degree while I was still in high school. And yeah, I wasn't good at physics, Esther. and then I got a master's degree. Still wasn't very good at physics. Then I got a PhD, slightly better at physics, but it was all with an underlying interest in astronomy.
What's the biggest obstacle when it comes to understanding physics? I mean, it's
abstraction.
Mm-hmm.
That was the hardest thing that I finally got, and I think it's really hard for anyone to. Let's say look at math and suddenly you have numbers and then those numbers turn into letters.
Hmm.
And that letter can be an infinite amount of numbers. Then like that, and then you're gone. Right. And so like I think this idea, Dr. Chanda Prescott Weinstein is an author. She just came out with a second book and it starts talking about metaphor. We actually did an episode on this shortwave.
The edge of space-time.
The edge of space-time. Mm-hmm. And she talks about how we need like metaphor, we need analogy, and we need that concept before we can actually do that. And I really think that's true. If you want to do any sort of science, there's a lot of memorization in kids and adults. They're like, I'm just going to memorize these facts and I'm just going to like read about quantum mechanics and memorize it and that's it. But that's not what science is. You actually have to like and make analogies.
But understanding those facts, understanding those terms, owning them, is you've got to have that before you can start moving into the expanding.
Yes. You have to understand where those things come from. And the only way to understand quantum mechanics is you can't just like start with particle physics. You have to like go back, right? And you have to like understand what particles are. How did we even figure out what particles were? Like, what is the terminology? What are you even reading? This isn't everyday like language, right? And it really is about language. It makes me think of like code switching, right? Like as a kid, like I remember my friends would make fun of me because I would sound different after I came back from California, right? Because I would have like that. Kind of
wait
accent.
Till we send you back from Western New York.
I know. I'm gonna sound like everyone here. But like, there's a great episode in Next Generation. We actually talk about this on the podcast, and Chanda talks about it in her book because it's our like we share this kind of love for this episode. It's called Darmok, and for any Star Trek fan, y'all know what I'm talking about. Next Generation, Captain McCard is like stranded on this world alone with this other captain, and he thinks that they're supposed to fight because he can't understand him. In the future in the Star Trek world, there are these things called these universal translators, but it doesn't work with this group of people, this civilization, because it sounds like they're speaking English, but they're just speaking in phrases. They're like Darmok at Tanagra, like Chaka, and they're just saying these words, and you're like, what are they saying? And it's because they're always referring to like the past, right? It's a reference language.
Okay.
And so like, he can't understand anything until he starts to learn their culture, until he starts to learn their history. Then he can understand the language. And so like, I think science is very similar. Like, you have to understand the terms. Then it's much easier to kind of like take these classes. I think there's so many, it's not just the math, it's the language. And it's the abstraction. It's like that trifecta that's like really, really difficult for many people.
Yeah, I can totally appreciate that. Yeah. I'm a facts person and I can memorize things, but boy.
Oh, so could I.
The concepts.
Whew. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's.
But I couldn't spell worth crap, so.
Oh, well. I got the doctor on that one for sure. Let's go through then that journey a little bit.
Yeah.
So what was it like then once you decided to take that step going toward advanced degrees and things along those lines? How was it for, was there an issue when it came to race, gender, anything along those
lines? Yeah, there definitely was. I think the only thing that kind of saved me was that I was incredibly conceited and I just was like, I'm the smartest thing in the world. So again, okay, let's go back to that horrible, horrible town that I grew up in.
Sure.
With like the racism and the sexism. It was a very small town. And we had, the high school, public high school had a choice between installing a pool, a tennis court, or a barn. And they installed the barn. And I used to say like, do you know that movie, like Footloose, you know, with Kevin Bacon? Like, imagine that movie, but racist. And that's where I grew up. There was no like alcohol on Sundays. You couldn't buy alcohol on Sundays. You couldn't have your lawn a certain length, or the city would come like cut it and charge you for it. It was messed up. So I thought I was a genius. Let's just, you know. And so I did this thing called Running Start in Washington State, and like, it let you go to community college instead of high school. And I just needed to get out of there. So it's not that I was a smart.
I just needed to get out of there.
I needed to get out,
okay.
Right? So like, I was 16 driving my, 1979 Volvo 2DL. and I'm just like driving it to Bellingham, which is, kind of this progressive city, college town, close by. And yeah, so like, I had this like, what do I want to say, unrealistic version of my intelligence.
Okay.
So I jump into college and I'm like, I'm the smartest thing alive. And I'm really good at talking. And physicists aren't good at talking.
Okay.
So, I'm this young woman who is, definitely does not belong in normal standards. But I don't care because I think I'm like amazing. And I also can talk better than everyone. So like that really saved me. And like my friends, like a lot of them didn't want to talk to like the secretary to ask for like a TA job, or they didn't want to like talk to the professor because they were scared. I'm like, I'll talk to them. Right. I was useful. I became useful. Right. And I think when you are an other, you have to become useful. And I think that's how I got through.
Wow. That's quite a statement.
That's true, though.
You were an other and you felt like you needed to be useful. You have to
Well,
be useful.
I mean, I think I realized that's why I was being, like, that's why it was easier, right? Like, I definitely knew I was useful. Yeah.
I'm curious about your self-esteem. Like you said, you call yourself conceited, but at the same time, you've got to look at looked at yourself as, I'll use the term object, you can use whatever term you want, but it almost looked like you're looking at this cardboard cutout of yourself.
Yeah. No, that's very true. I think that's true for a lot of, and not just me, right? It's not just me who has so many dimensions of like intersectionality. It's like, I mean, my professor, is a white guy from Colorado, right? But he has imposter syndrome because he grew up poor. Mm. And now he like is a bigwig at the university. But he would talk about this. He would be like, I go into a room And I didn't go to the nice colleges that those other kids did. I don't get these books that people are talking about. I grew up like near a bowling alley, you know, like, you know, and I think a lot of people have this imposter syndrome of like, it's not just me seeing this cardboard cutout. It's not just me seeing myself as like an object and being judged. Everyone in some way has that, right? I just talk about it more. And it's more obvious when it's me versus my professor who grew up near a bowling alley.
Do you think there's an advantage? Not an advantage, but there's, I mean, obviously you found a benefit to seeing yourself as being useful.
Yeah.
Is that something you would share with someone else? Say,
oh, be useful or else?
Be useful or else?
No. Hell, no.
Okay. No, that's fine. No, but I just wanted to,
For you, it worked. Absolutely not.
You understood it. It's something that you wanted to do.
Yeah, no. I think people need to be more kind.
I preach that.
And I also think it was probably detrimental to me to like really, you know, sit with my thoughts and be okay with the things I like, you know. And I remember I was a kid and I was a college student and I'd be like, there's one thing I dislike more than like, you know, everyone else. And it's like hanging out with myself, you know, and like listening to my thoughts going so fast. But I think it is detrimental to be like always performing. Right. And I think that coming back to race, you know, I mean, I didn't grow up in a large black population, but like I see here in Buffalo and I live in D.C. now. And it's very clear in our history that like, you know, black folk were given the chance to be successful if they were entertaining. Mm-hmm. Right. And like if they could be of use, if they could be of value or be property. Right. Be value. And so I think it is a sad thing. And I want to bring us back to Star Trek.
Please.
Because there's, I mentioned the reason you're like interested in this like Star Trek analogy is because there's this episode called Measure of a Man. And for a lot of your listeners who ever watched Star Trek Next Generation, there's Data, and he's an android. He's, you know, he was built, but he's a member of the crew. He like literally went through Starfleet Academy. He like did everything. He is not the captain. He is a member of the crew. And a scientist comes on board and says, I'm going to take him and I'm going to disassemble him and figure out how he works because that kind of technology has been lost. And the captain's like, you can't just take one of my crew and just like kill them for science.
Right.
You know, like you can't do that. And they're like, why not? He's property of Starfleet. And he's like, he's not property. He's a person. Right. And so this whole episode really gets into this idea of what is a person and what is property and why that's so awful. You know, this scientist keeps on calling him it, which is another like pronoun thing that is really interesting in that episode through like today's lens. But Whoopi Goldberg, she had just been nominated for Color Purple in like, you know, and she's and I think it's fascinating that she wanted to be on Star Trek. We'll go down that episode.
Sure.
Go down that story in a second. But she's in that episode in Measure of Man and she's talking to Captain Picard and she's like, her character is named Guinan. She's like this ancient alien who's like really wise. Which is another trope, I will acknowledge, the mystical, you know, female, magical black woman.
Mm-hmm.
But she had some say in this character. so she goes and she talks to Captain Picard and she's like, it's interesting. He wants to, like, take apart data, right? And he's like, yeah. Well, is the scientist going to make more datas? It's like, yeah, maybe an army of datas. And he's like, wow, a whole army, a whole race of people that are just valuable and useful and property. And Captain Picard's is like, whoa, you know, and then like it clicks in him, right? And he's like, you're talking about slavery. And she's like, what? You know, and I think it's, you know, a lot of people give Star Trek a hard time and they're like, oh, they don't talk about race right. And like, they say that they're colorblind. I'm like, I don't think they're colorblind if he's literally talking about slavery, right? And they're aware of these things and do talk about them. But yes, I don't remember what the beginning of your question was.
That's fine. We'll be back with more on What's Next after this on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Trust doesn't happen by accident. It's built through careful reporting, verified facts, and respect for the audience. BTPM NPR's local journalists take the time to get it right covering the issues shaping Western New York and Southern Ontario.
Immigration consultants like Tatiana Cabrera say they're seeing more interest in people coming to Canada, but warn there are still many hurdles to overcome.
It's not sort of a free-for-all type of an application, but I think it's still worth attempting for many people who see that they have either parent, grandparent, great-grandparent who may have been born in Canada.
UPD responded to a reported serious concern based on credible information and followed established police procedures. According to court filings from police, the students only had a photo to identify the person who made the threats.
News without spin, context without noise. This is Public Media.
What is BTPM Plus? It's an evolution of Buffalo Toronto Public Media that brings you the best of PBS, where you can watch your favorite programs live and dig into collections curated just for you. And here's the best part. When you stream BTPM Plus, you're not just watching, you're supporting your local public media station, the journalism, the arts, and the storytelling that keeps our community connected. Visit btpm.org/plus today. Stream smarter, stream local.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media brings our community together with programs that inspire, inform, and entertain. Enjoy trusted news, local performances, educational resources, and cultural treasures all in one place. It's more than media. It's a connection to the world around you. Discover what Buffalo Toronto Public Media offers at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media The Bridge. Made by music lovers and powered by listener support. Locally owned and operated. Always independent. This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues facing the communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM app, and we'll work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern we should be addressing? Email us at whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that matter. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
We're back with more on What's Next with Professor, or Dr. Regina Barber.
I guess you're not a professor anymore, right?
Yeah. PhD in physics and also host of Shortwave, the NPR podcast. I want to get into, because you mentioned as we're going to our little pause there, Whoopi Goldberg
yeah.
on Star Trek, but you also, Nichelle Nichols.
Nichelle Nichols.
Was of course, Uhura.
Yeah.
In the
60s.
In the 60s.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, a great background story that you gave me.
Yeah.
She was going to leave the show.
Yeah.
Because she
got a Broadway gig, which right. is what she wanted to do, like yeah. after the first year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And why, what made her stop?
Yeah, she was at this event, she said, in LA, some like donation thing, and so somebody came in the backstage and was like, hey, one of your Star Trek fans wants to come say hi to you. And she's like, oh, okay, you know, like she's had to deal with that a lot, like she had so much like fan mail that they offered a contract, they being Star Trek,
right?
And so, you know, this fan comes back there and it's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Right? And he's like, I love your show. Like, it's the only show I let like my kids watch because it's after their bedtime. And he's like, this is so great. Like, people are actually seeing us as people, as like just everyday people, not as like maids, not as like, you know, the past, you know, as people.
Right.
And she's like, yeah, well, I'm gonna miss my coworkers. Like, he's like, no. And he like basically lectured her for a very, very long time and told her, you can't leave. Like, he said that your role as Uhura is not a black role. It's not a woman's role. It is a character in a starship that can be replaced by anybody. And that door that you open could close.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, and she didn't leave, right? She didn't leave after
right.
that. And I think it's very, very important because that character, her character, Uhura, Nichelle Nichols' character, inspired Whoopi Goldberg. And she was like, that was the first time I saw somebody who looked like me who wasn't a maid on TV. Mm-hmm. And Whoopi Goldberg begged and begged and begged to be on Star Trek Next Generation. And they didn't believe her. So she finally called up Gene Roddenberry and she's like, no, like, because apparently LeVar Burton like sent the message and they didn't believe him. So Gene Roddenberry was like, why do you want to do this? And she's like, because before your show, we didn't exist in the future. And this is how we started this conversation. Like, you know, I've heard Mexican comedians say this too. Like, why aren't there any Mexicans in the future? You know, like she didn't see herself what happened to Black people in the future, right? And so she begged and she got on and she what is one of my favorite characters, right? And like she inspired me, right? She inspired the first Black astronaut, a female Black astronaut, Mae Jemison. And she actually, Mae Jemison, first Black female to go into space, she actually has been on Next Generation as like a character because she begged to be on the show. And she was a real astronaut who'd been to real space, but she wanted to go on Star Trek.
I love looking at the future with you. Obviously, yeah. you're enthusiastic about it, to say the least. But a big part of understanding physics, astrophysics, is actually understanding the past.
Yeah.
The origins of the universe.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, as you began to grasp that, how that maybe changed your understanding of our world, our society, how people view certain things like race, and how perhaps maybe if they understood a little bit more about the length
the vastness.
Of our vastness of our history, it might change that.
It wouldn't.
Wow.
There's still tribalness, you know, in our I don't know if that's the right term, but like, I think the cool thing about science is that most humans are curious. I think it's just a fact, right? And we, you know, I think many scientists have said this, like, we lose it, right? We lose that curiosity. And when people were telling me that, like, oh, you know, in the 1970s, they heard this like weird sound in radio astronomy and it was coming from everywhere in space. And they thought it was like the bird poop in the radio telescope, or they thought it was like New York City, or and then it turned out to be the sound of the beginning of the universe, right? Like, that's fascinating stuff. Like, the idea that like there was an explosion in the sky in 1054 AD. Supernova. It's where the Crab Nebula is now. It's by Taurus, if you know where Taurus constellation is.
I know. I do know where Taurus constellation is. I see it every morning.
It's slightly above the top horn is where the Crab Nebula is.
Okay. All right. I will look for that.
So that is an explosion that happened in 1054 AD. We know exactly the day. It was like July 4th, I believe. Please, somebody fact check me on that. But I think it's July 4th. And it got so bright, you could see it in the daytime. It was something in the sky, bright, for 2 months. Then you could see it in the sky at night for 2 years after that.
Wow.
And like every civilization that could see it wrote it down. Like there's even cave paintings where people think like that's the explosion that happened. And the remnants like is still there. Like there's something called a neutron star, which is the leftovers of an explosion like that. And it's pretty active. Like you can actually look at images and you can see like the material moving because it's like... not in real time, over like many, you know, days. It looks like it's moving, but it's fascinating. Like that happened in 1054 AD. But guess what? It didn't actually explode that day because light takes time to move. So how far is the Crab Nebula? Then somebody has to fact check that for me. But if it's so many light years away, it actually happened that many years ago, right? The nearest star to us is 4.2 light years away. So the light we're seeing from that star is from 4 years ago. Right? Like if we had a telescope and there was a planet around it and we watched like, I don't know, cars going by or something, it'd be what was happening 4 years ago with those cars, not now. Right? So there's so many fascinating things. And I think that once you start getting people curious and once you start talking about all these things, you start to realize that everyone really likes this. And it's not like, this is just like an Asian thing. This is just a, you know, man thing. This is just a US thing. This is like, everybody kind of likes this, which is bad to use universals, but everyone can like this.
Certainly.
It's like that line from Ratatouille, like a great artist. What was it? Like, not everyone can be a great artist, but a great artist can come from anywhere. Right.
I like that.
Like, so it's Ratatouille. It's science.
You know, before you got into Ratatouille and you were telling me about from 1054 and the sound that people would have been hearing on our radio would have been my mind blowing. So I do appreciate that, Regina.
Thank you. I have a lot of science stories that I like.
How about that part of it though? Like you said, everybody's curious. You know, but how about from your experience, what do you see is when you're talking about your the knowledge that you have on understanding of physics?
Yeah.
That grabs people. What are there certain things like, boy, if I start talking about this and I see I've got somebody reeled in.
I'm going to say something that's going to sound so freaking basic. It's all about the reps. You know, like I've said this story a million times. It's like being a comedian.
We'll repeat it.
Yeah.
It's like being
a comedian, right? You throw out a joke and you see how it lands and then you modify it. Like, that's what you do with these science stories, right? That's what you do with people if you notice they like a certain story. I think the human race also, we're curious, but we like stories, right?
Absolutely.
Like narrative.
Yes.
So if I've already told the story and, like, I know it hits, right? Then I'm going to say it again. I'm going to make some tweaks. Then I'm going to say it again. Then I'm going to say it again. And, like, I'll make it to a point where I know what people want to hear and what part of the science they actually connect with and what I can probably. I mean, that's what we do when we write scripts for a shortwave, right? You have to be a writer. You have to be a storyteller. And it's just about reps. It's just about telling that story again. And you're going to bomb. You're going to bomb. Some of these stories are going to bomb, but some of them are going to hit and hold on to those. And maybe they can teach somebody something.
We are coming down to our final minutes, and we do enjoy teaching people, and hopefully they are learning. You went through a lot of preparation to get ready for this program.
We've
kind of gone off on my own.
That's all
little
right.
Area, which is I'm known to do.
I like having these facts in my pocket. I'll use them. It's all about reps. I'm going to do it again.
Well, you know, let's not waste an opportunity here,
okay.
Though.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. I wanted to talk about. I already talked about Measure of a Man, which is Next Generation. I really loved Deep Space Nine when I was a kid. And this was a series, Star Trek series, that happened soon after Next Generation, the Star Trek series. And I really liked it because it was the first series that had a, you know, black captain. You know, like he would get a lot of flack. I remember as a kid how much racism, like, was kind of thrown at that series because the main protagonist was a black man, you know, and he was, like, angry. And I'm like, yeah, he's angry. His wife's dead. You know, like stuff happened to this guy, right? Like,
right.
And he's, like, a single dad working on this, like, ship that doesn't move. It's just a port and everyone's fighting on it. Like, poor him. He doesn't have it as good as Picard, you know? it's just like real life. And I remember there was this camps between Voyager, which was at the same time, Star Trek Voyager and Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And Star Trek Voyager had a woman captain, right? So she was like the woman captain, right? And I remember as a kid being like, well, I'm not a woman because I'm not white. So I feel much more in common with like the black captain, right? And it's because this was like very, very ingrained in you if you're a kid. I think a lot of women of color my age kind of, and even older, kind of identify with that. Just being in places that when people of color are not majority, we're kind of given this. There's one episode called Far Beyond the Stars of Deep Space Nine. And it's an episode where the main captain, Sisko, he kind of has this like weird interaction where he feels like he's gone back in time. He's in 1950s and he's somebody else. It's this guy named Benny. And he is a science fiction writer in the 1950s. And his boss doesn't want like him to be photographed because people just think he's a white writer. He's working with these women who have to go by like their initials so people don't know that they're women and they're writers. And he has this idea for like a space station called Deep Space Nine and has a black captain and his like boss is like, you cannot write a black captain, right? And it's this whole episode about like what this black writer goes through. And it's really heartbreaking. Like he kind of goes insane towards the end of the episode. And then it brings you back to Sisko and he's like, maybe I'm the creation of some author. Like maybe, yeah, I know.
There was Jay's that sound
eyes
again.
just went away. And it's just like a very, and it goes back and forth between like the prejudice that's happening in space in the future with the, it's not Kardashians, it's Cardassians in the future. And it just parallels kind of the injustice that's happening. We think that all of this like horrible stuff is gone because we're in the future, but it's not, right? And it's just a very poignant episode, and I think a lot of people might be new to Star Trek and they see it and they're like, oh, it's so woke, it's so weird. No, it's always been that way. It's literally like the foundation. And so when people, you know, like you asked me, how do you relate how do you rate science and pop culture and, you know, inclusion and justice and equity is Star Trek, right? And so many scientists that I know, I know many, many scientists of color. I'm part of an organization called SACNAS, so Society for the Advancement of Chicanos and Native Americans in Science. It's mostly just about race equity in science, largest gatherings of scientists of color in the nation every single year. The amount of the scientists that watch Star Trek is way bigger than you would assume.
Yeah. Oh, not after talking with you.
Yeah. So, yeah, it spoke to many of us. And I think that there are people that are, you know, curing cancer and going to space that owe it to this show. I really do.
It boosted them.
Oh, yeah.
It
gave them hope. Because that's what you need to get through a lot of stuff. I mean, it is okay to be sad. It is okay to be angry. You just can't be that forever.
Right.
Because it'll kill you.
So you live in Washington, D.C. now. You're from Washington State, or they spent a lot of your...
Yeah, most of my childhood was Washington State. Not the summers, though.
Somehow I get the feeling you're not going back to your high school reunion.
No, I will not be going back there. And when I drive through that town, I literally get like panic attacks. Like it is not great.
You don't think it's changed at all?
I think it has changed. There was actually a documentary just recently about a young black woman who lives there. And it was during the George Floyd protests and stuff in the middle of my town. And it did not, I don't think, went well. I couldn't even bring myself to watch it. I was like, I don't know. That would give me some PTSD.
Would you like to think that maybe the school no longer lists
Oh, they don't list that anymore. I don't think. I'm sure they still have the barn.
I'm sure they still have the barn and they're making good use of it.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that barns are bad. Right. I just would rather have a pool.
But you're here in Western New York and you're going to be making trips back.
Yeah, I love Buffalo. Yeah, go Bills.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. Well, you said that's one thing you've learned.
Yeah.
That's the magic term.
Yeah, I literally was biking around the lake by the museum this morning and I had my Bills sweater on and somebody almost walked in front of me on my bike and he's like, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. Go Bills. And then he just walks away because I had the sweater. So I know how to do this.
Maybe we've got an observation about what you see here in this town. I mean, we talk about race a lot.
Yeah.
What do you see and sense? I mean, because it's obviously considerably different than Washington, D.C. in that
it
fashion,
is.
Isn't it?
It is different from Washington, D.C. It's different from Washington State. I don't know yet. I don't know if I can answer that for Buffalo, but what I can answer for like East Coast versus West Coast, I think I can answer for that.
Oh, sure.
I grew up on the West Coast my entire life, border to border, you know, Canadian border to Mexico border. And race is talked about more in communities of color, you know, my families, but around, you know, my white friends and my white colleagues, they just didn't, you know, and there's a lot of, I don't want to say passive aggressive, but like, you know, there's a lot of unspoken things on the West Coast. There's a lot of like walls, physical and and metaphorical. But on the East Coast, you just like say exactly what you think. And when I was a kid, they'd be like, are you from the East Coast? And I was like, no. And they're like, but you're so opinionated and loud and blunt. And I was like, I'm just poor. They didn't understand. And I think I really like, especially Buffalo, in that sense, that I do feel this like kinship to this town in that sense, that like kind of this, you know, like blue collar, like just a regular person saying regular words and not trying to be anything you're not.
And if push comes to shove, just remember the two magic words, go Bills.
Go Bills. Go Bills. Bills. Go Sabres now.
Well, yeah, that's right. Oh, good. We're a major fan of you there. Well, good.
Hey, that took much longer. I'm not a hockey person. Now I am.
We'll work on that. Trust me. I've got
I will say, just to be fair with the sports, though, my first love is baseball, and go Padres, go Mariners.
Oh, okay. Well, very West Coast. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah. Nobody hates the Padres or Mariners, so except for the Dodger fans, and I don't like you, so it's fine.
Very good. Well, we'll look
Grandma.
We have to have you back so we can irritate some more fan bases when you
yeah.
come back with us.
Yeah.
All right. Regina Barber, thanks so much for being with us on What's Next.
Yeah, I do love my grandma. She just really loves the Dodgers. I'm so sorry. I love you, Grandma. She's still alive.
He and A. Martinez, right? Both.
Yeah, well, I think they probably live next to each other. But anyway, yeah.
Very nice.
Yes,
very
thank
nice.
You. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me and your questions.
Yes, thank you so much. Regina Barber, PhD and host of Shortwave on NPR. This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for the BTPM NPR What's Next podcast comes from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, partnering with the community to pursue racial and socioeconomic health equity. Learn more at hfwcny.org.